Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. Day 14 of World Cup 2018 is done. Brian Strauss and I will be talking about that as part of our podcast coming to you daily from Russia through July 16th. Just a small request, it would be a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It helps people find us. In this episode, I'm also joined by Fox Sports' Kelly Smith, who has done a terrific job analyzing games in the studio this World Cup. Onward! Let's bring in Brian Strauss from his hotel room here in Moscow. I'm in my hotel room. It is currently, as of taping, 3:10 a.m. local time. Brian, how are you?
I'm white.
Yeah, me too.
Had a long night at Spartak Stadium tonight. It's not called Spartak Stadium. It's the Haute Critique. There's no way I'm pronouncing that even 50% correct. And I have to look it up every single time I type it. But Brazil-Serbia tonight, Brazil won 2-0, covered that game, sat through perhaps the longest post-game press conference of my career, and Brazil played their best game of the tournament. So among the decorated favorites, among the favorites with championship pedigree, Brazil hits the group stage in the best form, but that obviously is not the biggest story today.
It is not, because one of the other champions of pedigree, in fact, the defending champion.
Speaking of pedigree, yeah.
Germany is out. Out in the group stage for the first time ever for Germany. But the fourth time in the last five occasions that the defending World Cup champion goes out in the group stage. What happened to Germany, Brian?
I don't know. I mean, that's fascinating, right? Because both of those statistics are true. Right. And yet, for some reason, I had Germany going to the final. You know, I mean, I would have put everything on the fact that all of the complacency and arrogance and laziness and inertia. That's the best word I can think of. All the inertia that has hit reigning champions in the past, you know, France losing to Senegal, Spain going out after only two games. In 2014, Italy going out in the group stage in 2010, all of that inertia, you just thought Germany was above that. You just thought there's something different about the ultimate tournament team that had turned over a significant amount of its roster from 2014, that this wouldn't, they were somehow above it, better than that, and they weren't. They were not better than that. They were not even better than South Korea. It's remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. You know, in all three of their group games, Germany needed a goal late. And I kept waiting for it almost as if it were inevitable against Mexico, and it didn't come. It did come against Sweden. And then you're kind of like, okay, they had their blip and their move forward. And then they couldn't score today. And good performance by South Korea. Good performance by the South Korean goalkeeper, Joe, who is my new favorite player. And and South Korea gets the right call, I thought, on VAR. Mark Geiger involved, the American ref. Gets the late goal and then gets an insurance goal with Manuel Neuer way upfield. And
they pulled the goalie, yeah.
They pulled the goalie. And Son gets it for 2-0, and Germany is out. And not only that, they're last place in the group. Mexico gets a favor from South Korea, despite losing 3-0 Mexico to Sweden today. Very similar to 2002 when the U.S.
Exactly
got a favor.
What I was thinking of.
Got a favor from South Korea, losing 3-1 in its last group game. South Korea, under Gus Hiddink, scores a late winner under with Park Ji-sung. I actually told my story to Gus today in the Fox trailer, and I said, I once asked Park Ji-sung, Park, do you know why so many American soccer fans love you? And he had no idea. But he was the guy whose goal saved the U.S. in World Cup 2002. And now Mexico will want to emulate that American team from 2002 that went on to beat Mexico in the round of 16 and go to the quarterfinals. And that seems like partly a psychological exercise, right?
Hold on one second.
Yeah.
I don't buy for a nanosecond that Parks doesn't know that. He scored so many World Cup goals that they all blend together? That's ridiculous.
Well, he remembers scoring the goal. He remembers scoring the goal. He doesn't understand why Americans love it.
And he didn't know that that goal changed the standings in the group. I don't buy that for a second. Not for a second.
You might be surprised to learn, Brian. You might be surprised to learn that Park Ji-sung does not see the world through red, white, and blue lenses.
There's only four teams in the group. How could you not know how the group finished? I don't buy it. Whatever. Anyway, not important.
Maybe his English wasn't good. I don't know. He just said he didn't know. Maybe he's trying to get rid of me.
It is my third World Cup, and I've spent an incredible amount of those three World Cups in the large media centers that are adjacent to and sometimes inside the stadiums, but usually adjacent to. They're these large temporary structures, like fancy wedding tents, I guess is the best way to put it. And they're filled with really long tables where we all sit and work for hours before and after the game. And I have never in my life been to a media center in my life, in any of my three World Cups, been to a media center that was more crowded than the one today at Spartak. And I think part of it was that Brazil was playing and they have a massive media contingent that follows them. And the other part is that everybody would just basically wanted to be in front of the TVs to watch to see how this group with Germany was going to play out. And so there were not only with every seat at every table filled, but people were standing. There were more people in the media center than there were seats. And people were standing in the aisles and in between the tables. And at one point, some CBS officials brought, I don't know how to describe it, brought basically boxes of swag, right? They were these flat boxes, and they had a couple of books on the Brazilian national team, like some media guides. I think they had a flash drive in them, whatever, stuff that you bring home and basically throw away like 2 days later. But it was like Black Friday Mets pickets charge. Like it's like everybody, the media center became Thunderdome, and you had basically all of these journalists like tearing, like there was one dude in tears, like tearing each other apart to get at these like CVS gift boxes. And I was with Stephen Goff and Kevin Baxter and Kurt Larson, and the four of us were just like, you've got to be kidding me. And so this was all going on like during at the crescendo of these games, the climax of these games. And it was nuts. And yes, the exact same feeling of, you know what, Mexico is going to lose this game. Even if you're a Mexico fan or someone who's interested in their fate or someone who's following them in this tournament, at that point you turn over to Germany, Korea, because that's the game that's going to decide, you know, your outcome. And it was, we were, you know, turning back and forth, trying to watch both games at once. And Germany deserves to go out. I mean, many of their big names, Müller, Ozil, Boateng, Hummels, Neuer, these guys who were world champions 4 years ago simply did not get it done this time.
Khedira.
This is not a fluke.
Yeah.
Yes, Khedira. This is not an accident. They just did not deserve to go through. And I guess Yogi Love said as much in his post-game presser.
Yeah. I mean, you tend to deserve what you get in this tournament. I think that's one of the good things about the tournament. But I'm still surprised. And part of what I was trying to work through after the game was when you say four of the last five World Cup winners have gone out in the group stage the following tournament, then the question is that a coincidence? Is it a small sample size? Or is there something that's actually happening where if you win a World Cup, your tendency is for that coach to remain and for that coach to stick with players who helped win that World Cup perhaps longer than he should have?
Yeah, I think there is enough of a sample size to not draw that conclusion to the point where you would bet that farm on it happening again, but certainly enough to say, yes, that's what's happening here. That all the players we just rattled off clearly weren't the same men they were 4 years ago in Brazil, and it happened to Spain, and it happened to France, and it happened to Italy, and maybe it'll happen, but you still do it. You still make the trade. I mean, if you ask me, do I want my country to win the World Cup and then be shitty 4 years later? You know, I don't care if the Capitals go out in the first round for the next decade. I don't care.
Grace
you know,
period.
We did it. We have it. Yeah, right. So it's fine. So you make the trade, but you wonder when you wonder when there will be a champion, maybe this time, maybe never, who will have the courage to say, you know what, we do see a pattern here, and we're going to turn this thing over anyway. We won it. We put the star in our shirts. We have the parade. We're world champions. They can never take that away, et cetera, et cetera. But we're going to start from scratch anyway, or turn things over. I mean, Germany won the Confederations Cup in pretty impressive fashion last year, and brought some of those players over. But obviously, it looks like in hindsight, maybe should have brought more.
I'm eating a piece of cheese, by the way. I bit it at the wrong time, so I apologize. I am so freaking hungry right now. I'm eating a full like hunk triangle of brie because it's the only thing I have in my mini bar fridge.
I ate a media center hamburger and salad at around 1 a.m, I think. And then when I got back to my hotel, I ate 2 rolls and a carton of yogurt that I had squirreled away from the hotel breakfast this morning. So covering a World Cup is a study in the lowest common denominator, and it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Group stage ends tomorrow, man.
Yeah, and then we got a day off of games. And I'm pretty excited, actually, about tomorrow. Group H is actually my favorite group of the tournament. It is the one where the seeded team Poland was eliminated after 2 games. And
yeah,
where Japan, Colombia, and Senegal are all in play for advancing, and they've all played quite well.
Colombia is the best team in that group for me. We talked about that. A couple of us were talking to an English journalist while we were waiting forever for Chiche to come into his press conference. We were joking about, you know, who tries harder to lose that Belgium-England game tomorrow, because obviously what we've got is a really lopsided looking bracket.
Right.
And if you can avoid the bracket that's got, you know, Brazil and France and Ronaldo and Messi and Uruguay and, you know, all that stuff, and get into that, you know, Denmark, Sweden, you know, Croatia bracket, that maybe is where you want to be. So a lot of interesting permutations. Some coaches have to do some try but not try too hard kind of coaching and some lineups, and we'll see how they approach that game. But the bracket is shaping up to be pretty interesting. Obviously, Brazil, Mexico. You know, when we were, you know, 2 games into the tournament, Brazil and Mexico was 2-0. Hard to see them playing Brazil, but that's the way it's worked out. And so the Quinto Partido is going to be a tough one for Mexico to reach. Brazil looked good tonight. No silliness or antics or nonsense from Neymar. There was one bit where he got fouled near the sideline and he rolled around a bit, but he got back up. He was complimentary. He was connecting. He was on the ball quite a bit. He was working with Coutinho. Brazil doesn't do a lot of side to side. You know, they're very direct. They're incisive. Obviously, the skill and the technique is what we always expect. They weathered a storm from Serbia early in the second half. They scored a backbreaker, just kind of sucked the will and the life out of the Serbs kind of, you know, toward the end. It was just a really good performance from Brazil. And of course, Serbia is not, you know, a world-class team. They're not a World Cup contender. But you want to see teams get better in the group stage, and Brazil definitely did that tonight.
Yeah. I mean, also, we should say a couple of things. Switzerland advances as the second place finisher in Brazil's group. And, you know, obviously you've got Sweden advancing as the winner ahead of Mexico, with Germany out. In terms of the Belgium-England game, there's actually an incentive to finish second in that group, because you go to the easier side of the bracket. So, but I thought it was interesting. Both coaches, England's Gareth Southgate said today that we are playing to win the game in a very sort of Herm Edwards style. And then Roberto Martinez, the Belgium coach, said, we don't have to win this game. So I thought that was an interesting approach.
Didier Deschamps, before the France-Denmark game, emphatically, we are here to finish first. And then benched half his regular starters. So now a France B plus team is still, you know, good enough to get a draw against Denmark. So it wasn't like he was risking much. But coaches say one thing and do another. I'm really, really intrigued to see how Southgate and Martinez approach it. I'm impressed with what Southgate's done. He says all the right things. This England team looks to be just you know just more younger and more together and more focused and you know, than teams in the past have been. And so, you know, Belgium's a big challenge, and we'll see how they sort of negotiate this interestingly awkward kind of proposition of, you know, maybe they look at it as, you know, we either win the group, in which case that's an accomplishment, or we lose and we get the easier bracket, and maybe that's the way, you know, you're in a no-lose situation.
All right, man. Good talking to you. Get some sleep. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'm so tired. Like, I'm listening to the words coming out of my mouth, and I'm just like, man, you need to sleep. You need to stop.
Yeah. Time to sleep, man. Good night. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and just with a few taps, I can instantly find seats. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code GRANT today. That's promo code GRANT for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Big thanks to Brian Strauss. Next up is my interview with Kelly Smith. Our guest today is one of my favorite people in soccer and one of the greatest soccer players in England history. She's also working for Fox Sports during the World Cup here in Russia. Kelly Smith, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for asking me to be on, Grant.
I'm very psyched to talk to you. I've really enjoyed watching all your stuff during this tournament and working with you. You got so good at the night show that they put you on the day show, so I don't get to work with you anymore. I'm mildly personally disappointed about that, but congratulations on everything you're doing.
Thank you. No, I really enjoyed working with you on the Tonight Show. It was good fun, and we got to dissect the game and have a little bit of banter at the same time. I think that's always important, that you bring a lot of fun to this World Cup. We're watching such fantastic games, and then to be with like-minded people on the sofa enjoying it, and Fernando Fiore's the crazy host. It was good fun, and I really enjoyed it, and obviously I'm pleased that the producers liked what I was doing, and then removed me from that show and put me onto the main desk and doing the main game. So I was surprised by that, but really, really thrilled at the same time as, you know, being given that opportunity and that platform to speak about the games as the only female on the talent to do that.
It seems like at the World Cup, we're seeing a bit of a breakthrough at a men's World Cup in terms of women like you on the studio show, Ali Wagner calling games. I know there's a few other countries, including England, where women are calling games in this World Cup. I think also in Norway and maybe Sweden as well. That's a cool thing to me and to you, I would assume.
Yeah, it's fantastic to be given this opportunity. There are a couple of females in England that are on BBC and the ITV platform, and everyone's getting really good reviews. And that's what's pleasing, is that, you know, the general public are accepting the fact that we're females and we have a valid opinion about the game. We've played the game at the highest level, win World Cups, Olympics, European Championships, international experience, you know, across the board. And football's football, so it's the same talk, whether men play it or women play it. And, you know, I know Ali Wagner's done a fantastic job. It's really delightful to hear her and her, the way that she sees the game and the way she breaks it down and analyses it. And I think it's a good thing that, you know, we've been given these opportunities.
So what are your thoughts at this point on the World Cup? We're just getting near the end of the group stage. Lots of storylines. I'll get to England, your country here, soon in a bit. But, like, other things that you've seen that have really stood out to you?
But it's been glorious because you get to watch so many matches per day. I think the teams that have stuck out for me so far are Mexico. I wasn't expecting them to do so well. Obviously beating Germany in their opening game. I thought they were fantastic going forward. Their game plan was spot on. And that Chucky Lozano, he's a great player. He's really been a superstar this tournament for Mexico. Obviously, Germany was a little bit disappointed in them the first opening couple of games, but then they really pulled it back with that last-minute dramatic free kick by Cruz. Croatia, I've been really, really impressed with. Three games, three wins, top the group. And they made a number of changes in their game yesterday and still managed to pull off a win. There's been teams that have been a little bit disappointing. For me, Sweden, you know, and Iceland to some extent. Yeah. They have a way of playing. And I understand that they play that way because of probably the players that they have. But for me, I like to see exciting attacking football. And certainly Brazil have done that at times. Portugal don't really keep the ball and possess it well enough for me. But then they have that outlet of Cristiano Ronaldo, who started the tournament on such a massive high. And obviously England, you know, we have to speak about them. They've done well to get through only after two games.
Yeah, let's talk about England. I mean, this is a team you followed over the years. What is this? We keep hearing Alexi say on the broadcast, this is a new England team. Do you agree with that?
I do to some extent. I think the players are younger. They've come through the ranks in the youth system with Gareth Southgate. So they really know his management style and he knows them as players and people inside out. And it seems like they have a real belief in what they're doing. They're playing with expression and freedom. We're not the same rigid 4-4-2 that has happened in the past. You know, 3-5-2 is wanting to possess the ball more in the midfield. And we've got a threat always in Harry Kane. We've not really had that out-and-out striker over the last few years. We've had Rooney in and out. But I think, yeah, there's just a youthfulness and a belief within this England team that they really believe in what they're doing and going to go far.
What seems to be happening in recent years with youth development in England? Because we've seen England youth teams win, you know, youth World Cups at different levels in recent years. What has changed to allow this sort of youth development to happen?
I think the academies in England are really got top level coaches in their structure, and obviously we've now developed St George's Park, which is in Burton. It's the main hub where all the England teams use the best facilities, the best physios, and you know the coaches really have an input in what goes on. And I think the talent that we have in the youth systems now, it's a lot better than it was in the past, and they're being brought up, they're getting international experience a lot younger than probably, you know, the Gerrards, the Lampards did. And yeah, it's just really showing in their youth play and bringing it up to the senior level.
If I say to you, what is good football? What's good soccer in your mind? What would you say?
What would I say? What attractive football, you mean?
Yeah, in your mind. When you're watching a game, and like what do you like?
I like players that are really comfortable on the ball, especially from the goalkeeper. A goalkeeper that's really good with his feet, that can play out to the defenders, and they look composed and can bring the ball forward. You've got good rotation in the middle of the park with numbers. And then, you know, always playing the ball forward if you can. Not backwards, not sideways. If you can sneak it around the corner and get an attacking player into space, running forward, taking defenders on. And you know, getting the ball wide for crosses into the box or getting to the byline and cutting the ball back. I like possession and I like flair players. I want the forwards, my attacking players, to get on the ball as high as up possible and then just let them do the work. Let them express themselves and let them see the game.
How many teams in this World Cup would you say play good football?
How many teams? I think Brazil, I like the way they play because of the flair that they have in Coutinho and Neymar and Gabriel Jesus. I really love them and I've tipped them to go far and potentially win the tournament. Germany at times, just with the flair that they have and the talent going forward. France, I think they have the best, with them and Belgium, the best individuals as a team. And I think Belgium clicked in their last game against Tunisia with the De Bruyne, the Hazards, the Lukaku's. It's just the Mertens, yeah, just names that you roll off your tongue that are in that side. But when they get on the ball and they click and they interchange positions and they're peeling off the shoulders of the defenders and that creative play, it's a pleasure to watch.
So when you're on a show with Fox and you're breaking down, you decide to choose some video to break down tactically on a show, I think my listeners would be interested in hearing how you go about putting that together with, like, producers, I assume?
Yeah, they're in your ear as we're watching the games, and anything that we see or we think would be interesting to the general public, we speak to them through our ears just to clip that. And then we make, with the producers, they make a quick libretto where they highlight what we're seeing and they maybe move the player into a position or highlight the run that they should have made or the pass that should have been made. So it's just breaking it down so we can analyze it and then tell the public what is happening and why it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I got into television only in recent years, and I've learned all these terms that I had never heard before. For me, libero is like a position on the field, but it's also something that they put together. It's like a short video of something that's happening on the field that you then break down.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I actually worked for Fox last year in Canada, what it was. It's called something different in England. But I don't know what it is called in England, but yeah, it's new terminology to me too.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm still learning terms. And when you're working with, like, typically they've had you on quite a bit with Ian Wright, quite a bit with Alexi Lalas, probably both Kate Abdo and Rob Stone. Like, when you're working with folks from different countries, are styles different?
Yes and no. You know, I think Alexi is amazing. Alexi Lalas is amazing because he has done every game so far, it seems. I don't think he's taken a break. And he's just so knowledgeable and witty with it. And he has a great understanding of the game. And he makes you just feel, like, really welcomed on the desk. He's not got an ego. He's not anything... He is what it is. You know, you see him and that's how he is. He's really just a genuine down-to-earth guy. And obviously I know Ian Wright from many years ago. He was actually one of my idols as a player growing up for Arsenal. And then I've got the opportunity to become his friend and work with him. And that is a dream come true for me because he was Mr. Arsenal. And now we're dissecting games together and we're having a little bit of banter on the set. With Rob Stone, he's just been a pleasure from day one. Because I was so nervous, you know, working in Canada, coming out of football playing to then being a pundit or a broadcaster. What do we call it? An analysis.
Yeah.
Analysis in the US. And I was just nervous. And, you know, he put his arm around me and he could tell that. And he was just made me relaxed. And then even now in Russia, he's, you know, he just gives you a little wink or a little nod just to say you're doing well. And just a little pat on the back. And then Kate Abdo, obviously, I work with in Canada too, and she's just really warm and lovely and is a great at what she does. And I just love working for Fox because it's such a great network and really, really friendly and lovely people that make you feel a part of the production team.
Yeah, how did you get connected to Fox in the first place ahead of Women's World Cup in 2015?
It was actually my agent. He knows David Neal, who is massive within the Fox industry. Mm-hmm. And they got talking and knew that I was wanting to do some more TV. Mm-hmm. And then, I signed on the dotted line when I heard what great things and the Fox were doing for women's soccer. And obviously I saw the set and the mock-up of the set on a visual. And I was like, oh my God, that is amazing. I have to be there with the ocean in the background. And we saw orca whales. We saw helicopters flying over, seaplanes landing. It was an open studio. It was just unreal experience to be working for Fox.
I mean, whether it's been in Vancouver on that set or here in Moscow on this set in front of St. Basil's Cathedral in Red Square, sometimes I sort of have to pinch myself when I turn around and look and see it because it almost doesn't seem real.
Yeah, it's just like it's like a statue of just like in a little doll's village or something. It's so perfect.
Yeah.
And when you turn around and you see all the fans, you know, looking up at you, wondering who you are, what you're doing, and then you just see that cathedral. It's just like, whoa, I'm in Russia, I'm on Red Square, I'm here. And it's just an unreal, amazing experience.
Yeah. I don't know if all of our listeners know this, but you went to college in the United States at at Seton Hall, and then had a terrific career in the Women's Professional League in the U.S. before you went back to play in England. How did you end up going to Seton Hall in the first place?
It's a little story. I was playing in a soccer tournament in my hometown of Watford against an American college side, and I got scouted. There was a couple of scouts that were watching that game, and they spoke to my father on the sideline at the end of the game and said, you know, your daughter's really, really good. She can get a scholarship to go to America. And those two colleges were Seton Hall and Rutgers.
Okay.
And then after that, William and Mary come into play.
Okay.
And I spoke to all three colleges, and I knew nothing about the American college system because you don't growing up in England. You just know that the women's national team is amazing, as it was. And then it just went from there. I spoke with the two coaches, three coaches, and then I liked Betty Ann Kempf, who was the coach at Seton Hall. She really welcomed me. I flew out to New Jersey to view the school, and I liked the fact that it was a small, intimate school. I'm not like a big school person because I was quite shy and not really comfortable in my own skin back then, and I knew I'd be looked after there, so that was why I went to that school.
You had a terrific college career. And this is where I come in with a mea culpa, because you were drafted by Philadelphia. And you know what I'm about to tell this story here. And for whatever reason, and I actually have no idea now, I can't even remember, it was back in like 2003.
Yeah.
When there was a draft and Philadelphia picked you with a very high pick.
Second round.
And a certain pundit writer out there, me, wrote that this was a bonehead decision by Philadelphia to have selected Kelly Smith with such a high pick. And then you proceeded in the years after that to prove me horribly wrong. And I will say now that this is one of the dumber things I've ever written in my career, and I am very sorry.
Oh, no. You've already apologized. You don't have to apologize again. But it did, like, grind me. It bothered me when I read that, because I knew in my own abilities and I knew what I could do and I knew the levels that I could reach. And to read that, I've just felt... It angered me, if I'm honest. And I wrote about it in my book years later in 2011, I think, my book come out, 2010. And then obviously you read that, and then we met in Vancouver, and then we had a little...
We had a discussion, and I apologize there. I'm doing so publicly now because...
You don't
I think
have
it
to
is,
apologize.
I think it is appropriate, but it was the funniest scene because I think it was the 2012 Olympics. I was in Newcastle covering the tournament, the Olympic tournament. And there's a really good sports bookstore in Newcastle, not far from the stadium. And they had your book. And I'm just reading through it, not expecting. Like, there's a good two pages in there about me and this idiotic thing that I wrote. But I didn't realize how much it motivated you, actually.
Yeah, no, when anything that you read like that. I think so early on in my career where I didn't really have a chance to prove myself, I knew what I was capable of.
Yeah.
And there were to be fair to you, there were very good players that went after me. I was paired with Doris Fitchin, who was with the German national team coach. Yeah. There was a very talented league. It was a pleasure to play in that WSA. But it was something that shocked me, and I just wanted to go out and express myself and prove everyone wrong, because there wasn't just you, there was a number of other people. Yeah. Because I was kind of unknown, and England weren't very, you know, weren't a top nation back then, so there were other players that were probably more high profile than me. But I think, you know, I proved some people wrong with my scoring record for Seton Hall, and then obviously my performances in the WSA after that.
I would suggest anyone who's listening, Google Kelly Smith and just watch some of the highlights, because there's so many great goals, whether it was in WSA, whether it was in World Cups, 2007 World Cup in particular, I thought was just a really cool moment. Enjoyed watching you. Like, where did, like, when you grew up playing in England, and I know there wasn't always encouragement for young women to play the sport there, how did you get so good?
It was a lot of street football, a lot of playground football. When the playground bell went, I'd always be with the boys, jumpers down, sweatshirts down, should I say, for goalposts. And it was just five-a-side all the time. And when it got dark, we went home. So it was just hours and hours of football. And I'd always have a ball at my feet. I'd always be working on my technique without really knowing that I was doing it. I would always hit a ball against the wall. and work on my first touch coming back. I'd use my laces, the outside of the foot. I'd write in chalk on the walls a circle or a square, and I'd try and aim and work on my passing accuracy. I'd kick a stone to school. If I didn't have a stone, it would be a tennis ball. I just lived and breathed the game, and I'd always watch games, and then back then it was VCRs. I'd rewind them, and then if Ryan Giggs had done a certain move in a certain part of the pitch, I'd practice those step overs with a balloon in my front room with the TV there. It was in my brain 24/7.
Huh. Awesome. And do you miss playing?
Actually, one of the wardrobe ladies asked me that the other day, and I don't miss playing.
Really?
Do you know what I do miss, though? Sometimes when the big games roll around, like I attended the Women's FA Cup final at Wembley, and it was Arsenal v Chelsea, and I sat there, and that was the first time in 2 years I thought, oh, these are the games I love, the big ones where there's a load of people in the stands and you're playing for a trophy. They're the games I miss. But towards the end of my career, my body was starting to hurt. It was hard to get out of bed in the mornings and be motivated. And obviously now I've got my baby boy, Rocco, who's a year old. I haven't had a chance to miss the game because I'm always running about after him and looking after him. So as much as I've had a great career, I think I'm enjoying retirement.
Yeah. I can't let this end without asking you a little bit about women's soccer in England, because we're seeing some things lately. Manchester United finally has announced that they're starting a women's team. It seems like some of the clubs in England are investing more money in women's teams now. What's your opinion of that? Is that beginning to be a bit more widespread?
Yeah, it is. And they've changed the format of the league. They've now added a second division, so there will be a promotion and relegation, whereas before it was just the 8-team league where no team would get relegated. So I think that's important. There are other teams coming on board. Brighton are back in, West Ham, as you said, Manchester United. That is massive for the women's game.
Yeah.
Because obviously Man United is a global team, and for them to come on board just says what it, you know, just speaks volumes for the game in general, because Manchester City have also taken the game by the scruff of the neck, and they're full-time professionals. They get to use all the facilities, and, you know, Arsenal, again, they're still up there. They got left behind a few years ago, but they've upped their game now. So the game is in a real healthy place. But some of the lesser teams seem to be struggling financially, which could be a problem, because there's still, in my opinion, not enough people coming to watch the games. And the clubs are losing money by having a women's team, and somehow that has to change.
In terms of the England national team, we saw them go to the semifinals of the last Women's World Cup. How do you feel about the chances they have for next year?
They've got very good chances. They're going to qualify. I'll put my neck on the line and say that. They've not lost a game yet. And obviously they've got a new manager in Phil Neville, the former Manchester United player. I know all the girls really are enjoying playing under him. They can relate to him because of his successful career. And, you know, they've certainly got all the talent and the players and the hunger there. Fran Kirby's a player that I really like. And she's going to hit the ground running, I think, next World Cup in Paris. She's already got a taste for it. She's won a load of awards, individual awards this past season, broken goal tallies. And for me, just defensively, they could be a little bit weak, but going forward, they're really, really good. They've got a lot of pace, which England haven't had in the past. Down the wings and down centrally.
Yeah.
So there'll certainly be a threat and up there.
Nice. Well, Kelly Smith, it's been a pleasure working with you at this tournament and a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me on, Grant. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss and Kelly Smith, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help the cause if you do, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.